thunderstorm that was developing in the early morning hours ahead of a slow-moving cold front. Cold blooded. With tornado watches issued shortly before noon Sunday for the areas including the western region of my mental health and the northern portion of my ability to deal rationally with my disconcerted, precarious emotional situation. Cold out there. Colder than a ticket taker smile at the Ivor Theater on Saturday night. Flash flood watches cover the southern portion of my disposition.
Yeah.
There was no severe weather well into the afternoon, except for kind of a lone gust wind in the bedroom.
And, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome, welcome to the French Connection's 24th day of January broadcast. 10 o'clock here in central France. 10:06 in central France. Cold as all get out outside, guys. It's 21 degrees or 22 degrees out here. Freezing. And, great day to be on the radio with you. I got lots of stuff to talk to you about. In fact, you know, anybody who knows that intro on this show is done by a man named Tom Waits. If you don't know who Tom Waits is, you don't know much about the 1970s, because this guy was the conscience of the country for a long time. And he is not as famous as, you know, some of these other ne'er-do-wells like Dylan. I used to like some of Bob Dylan's stuff, but if you listen to this man's stuff, you just get knocked over. If anybody knows how to get in touch with him, email me. I would love to interview Tom Waits. I mean, that would be a real great thing. And I think the listeners would absolutely be floored by Tom. He's in the Los Angeles area, I think, or somewhere in Northern California, somewhere like that. I don't know. Anyway, so much happening. You know, I'm in the crosshairs of everybody's stuff. They're writing all kinds of stuff about me. I'm this. Who am I? Where am I? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? How did I get here? How did I go there? All that sort of stuff. And, you know, I don't know why. And maybe, you know, because I'm making waves and they just want to look for ways of trying to mess me up or whatever they're trying to do. But most of the stuff is the hit pieces. And they got a guy emailing me saying to me that, you know, when Michael Piper was on the show the other day, and he said that Lyndon Johnson, when he didn't send the fighters there to defend the USS Liberty, that the story ended up in the back of the newspaper. Well, this guy says that it ended up in front of some New York paper's front page, and that so because Michael Piper said that, then everything else he said is discredited. In other words, he set Michael Piper up as being disinformation, is what he said. Fact is, I get my information on several sources, not only Mike Piper, and Mike's right on the money. 99.9, I mean, the fact that it was on page 21 or page 1 is maybe in some way significant, but the fact is, that person still can't explain why the Israelis were attacking an American warship and then trying to shoot the lifeboats in the water. I mean, when he can explain that one, you know, we'll know more. So, Mr. Matthias up in New York, there is your answer to that question. And I'm just moving forward here. I want to say some stuff a little bit more about, you know, I go back to this all the time, over and over again. Catholics, Catholic Church, very, very small player in this world, conspiracy guys, very small. In fact, they virtually have no role other than what bully pulpit they can have or how they can maybe arrange people to, you know, to, I don't know. I don't see them having any role in this. I mean, I've looked everywhere to try to find a Catholic. There's no Catholics in the White House. It's full of Zionist-backing Republicans and actual Jewish members of Zionist Jewish members. Evil ones at that. And the same with our financial system, and the same with our media, and the same with our entertainment system, and the same with our national curriculum writers, and the same of our major universities, and the same, and on and on and on, and the same with all of our major businesses, and the drug companies, and the Federal Reserve across the country, and it's the same. And I don't see any people from the Vatican involved in any of this stuff. Just don't see it. Use your common sense. It's a diversion, man. Jesus, you know, if all the thing points to so one person, it can't be the other guy. I mean, unless I've been just completely wrong, but Benjamin Friedman ain't wrong, and, Untermeyer's not wrong, and we can go, Mr. Fagan is not wrong. Go to my site. We've got a new thing by this guy Fagan. Holy smokes, is this unbelievable. Another insider comes out, 1960s. A lot of people tried to stop these folks over the years, man. A lot of people have tried to come out and say, these guys are really rotten to the core, and you've got to take a look at this. And for some reason, it just kind of melted back into the ether. And Eric and I have been working, and people have been helping us. And, you know, we've been getting stuff, and man, the stuff is coming out. And, you know, it's undeniable. And these people name names. They name people, dates, places, times, meetings, what they did, what they said, where they were, when they were there, who they influenced, who they bought, how much they used. All of it's there. It's all there. It's all part of the historical record, and it's coming from a first-person perspective. And never once did I hear them say that the Pope was involved, although he's been, you know, doing some shady deals with the power elite of the world, I'm sure. The Vatican doesn't get to have its little Vatican country over there unless they're playing ball with the global power elite. And of course, you know, if the Catholic Church started fighting back against these people, somebody with $200 trillion can take the Catholic Church and stomp it into the ground. And they know that over in Rome, I'm sure. And so, whenever they need the Roman Church to back whatever they're doing, I'm sure that they can get them to go along with it. I'm sure of it. But you look across our country and all of our moronic leadership in the religious right, they're all following these Zionist Nimrods as well. They bought and paid for all these people. We don't, Americans come cheap these days. It's unbelievable. Eric and I were having a conversation about this yesterday. How cheap it is to buy somebody's loyalty. I mean, wow. I got everything I need here pretty much. You know, it doesn't work very well. It breaks a lot, but I'm learning how to fix it myself, which is really pretty good. But I have my integrity, and I have heat today. I fixed my boiler. And I got the things I need to get by, and that seems to be okay with me. I'd like my health. That's one of the things that I can't buy back. You just have to try to do the right thing with yourself and not get too stressed out, which these days is almost impossible for me to do, especially when I'm trying to do all this stuff. It stresses me out terrible. But and then I can't get up in the morning because I feel terrible half the time, but that's all right. You know, I'd rather feel terrible and help out with this battle than just sit here and wonder why I didn't do something, you know. And that's the same question you guys need to ask yourself. We get off our butts and do something. Call a friend. Send them this email address to the website and to this programming. And we are going to do some stuff. Next segment, we got more stuff. And Lieutenant Colonel Karen Katowski, Dr. Katowski, will be on later on. We'll talk about all kinds of stuff with her. Be right back. Back. Well, let's get back into this mess we're in here. And, I sit here every day, and some days that I'm feeling really, invigorated. And I feel like I have clear vision and I can kick some fanny and all that stuff. And other days I feel cloudy and I got brain cloud certain days, you know. But today I was sitting here thinking, and I was listening, to some other broadcasts and hunting around the net. And everyone knows, if they've been listening to this programming for a while, that I think this economy is going south quickly. The reports are coming in from all over the place that the whole thing is starting to come apart at the seams. And I always said, way back in May and in April, I said that this mess would be precipitated by one of two things, either this bird flu that I knew about back then, or it would be a financial collapse, or both. And it's still not clear whether it will be both or just the financial side. The financial collapse alone can do it. And I'm wondering, you know, if they're not going to use the impeachment process of George Bush. They're going to let that go forward. And they'll vote against it in the final analysis. And so what will happen maybe, and this is just a throwing this out to you, and maybe they'll use that to divert attention away from this month of February where they're getting ready to do this this Iran mess, which, by the way, I think the Iranian government's thick as thieves with these people. And they're gonna, you know, they're gonna do some nasty stuff to the Iranians, try to cause an implosion of that place. I can't imagine they wouldn't want to kill and maim as many people as they could, because part of their goal is to reduce and rid themselves of the Arab and Persian populations in their region so they can have that area for themselves. But it seems to me that they're going to give America's military and the American government, not the American people, but the American government, this last hurrah, and then they'll pull the rug out from under everything. And they'll try to turn it into a Soviet-style, nightmarish state. Well, look, you know, they were able to close down the entire country of China for 50 years. They were able to do the same thing in Russia for 79 years. What makes you think that they don't believe they could do this to America? They probably, with their hubris and some of the craziest, and plus their record of successfully doing it elsewhere, they probably feel like they could do it. Now, I made up the point with when talking with Eric that, you know, well, we've got 200 million guns in the country, but I don't know that the American, you know, there'll always be people fighting, and that's a given. But I don't see people even willing to stand up, you know, to argue with their local politicians anymore, or even bother arguing about school board decisions anymore. There are some exceptions to that rule, and I clearly want that noted. But by and large, the country has become severely atrophied, both in its moral compass as well as its willingness to fight back. Now, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, I didn't have much of a compass of any sort. I mean, you know, I just kind of blazed through life and took opportunities when they came upon me and did things kind of off the cuff. But now, as an aging human being and looking at the world, I try to put some thought into the things that I'm doing and see what's going on around me. And I have absolutely got to tell you guys, I figured this out a while ago. If I don't stop this, it's going to be a terrible mess worldwide if I don't help spread the word of this. So I took it upon myself to do everything I could to get this word out. And I'm wondering if... And I know you guys are too. I mean, we've got 4,000 people listening regularly, and sometimes 5, sometimes 10, actually, sometimes 10,000, sometimes even more. But that's still not going to cut the mustard when we need to inform so many people. It's not going to do it. It's just not. So what I've been talking about lately, of course, we had Leland Lehrman on yesterday, and Leland had his take on the Jewish community's reluctance to fight back against its leadership, and how dangerous that really is for the community, and that if in fact they don't rise to the occasion soon, they may get swept up in some terrible blowback. These leaders that are in their community don't give one hoot about what happens to them. They just simply don't. And that is also in the documents from Fagan. Fagan's stuff on my website will knock you for a loop. It is unbelievable. And when you read this stuff, you'll be thrown over. Myron Fagan, MyronFagan. Myron Fagan's speech, it's very long, ladies and gentlemen, it's very long. But it's also, Eric and I are in the process of taking out some of the more cogent and important parts. You'll also find Benjamin Friedman's entire broadcast there. Not 40 minutes, 127 minutes is the original. However, much of that is very, very laborious to listen to. At least I found it laborious. The second part of that, or we did leave the short section up there, the more boiled down version, because 40 minutes of this, I think, would probably be as powerful a thing as you'd need to really get motivated. And then once you fall deeper into it, you might want to play the whole thing. These two documents, and then substantiated by Samuel Untermeyer, the three of them together, ladies and gentlemen, it is devastatingly accusatory, and it's almost proof positive, because first person accounts are a legitimate source of proof in a courtroom. Now, granted, these people aren't here anymore, so that we're having to go by a historical record, but this is from their own mouths, and they participated, and there's proof of that. So when you read this stuff and you see it, and then you see the events, and then, of course, you talk about what we talked about with Leland last night with the protocols of the Elders of Zion, and then you take a look at the parallel between historical events and all the things they foretold in that document, almost word for word, it's happened to a T, to a letter. And many of the same things have happened with Old Testament prophecy. They've lived off of some of the dates and times and enemies, and and you just take a look at it all, and then you sit there and you just mull the whole thing over in your head, and you go, my goodness, this is real. And not only is it real, when you look at the bankers being all from this community and the media all from this community and you look at their reach into different nations and what they did to Russia and what they did to Armenia and what they did to World War One and Two and the Germans and how they've controlled the French and what they have done in the United States over and over again. This guy Brooks building a faulty body armor for the military, making $180 million, and then standing there smiling while he spends $10 million on his daughter's bat mitzvah. Good gravy, ladies and gentlemen, and not a single problem coming from him. No investigation, nothing. You know, the criminality of this group is just amazing. When we come back, we have Lieutenant Colonel and Dr. Karen Katowski and friend, actually. So, stick with us. And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Daryl Bradford Smith, your host today on The French Connection. And, you know, it's great to have my next guest here, my first guest here today, and the only guest, in fact, with me. She's been on the show many times, and she usually does short stints with me because she's got so many things to do at this hour of the day. And usually she's getting home from one of her engagements and going to another or working out at some point. So she's going to do a half hour with us today, which is fine, and I'm very happy to have her for any amount of time she'd like to spend with us. Her name is Dr. Karen Katowski, Lieutenant Colonel, I think Air Force, was it?
Yeah, Air Force. Mm-hmm.
Air Force retired. And also somebody that I've had a lot of time on the phone with. And, you know, Karen, we've been talking a little bit about this guy, Franklin, in the press lately. Mm-hmm. Larry was somebody that milled around your office just a bit during his tenure at the Pentagon. And it's interesting to note the deals that were cut with him. I'm wondering just how long I think, you know, they're going to let him before they Arkanside him. I'm I mean, I think he's heading for an Arkanside if anybody is.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of, I don't know that much about it other than that a lot of people are saying the 12 years is a really short sentence. And I think it was shortened, and it's been reported that it was shortened because he's cooperating, because he's saying everything that he knows. And Larry was in a position to see quite a bit more than I ever was able to see. And I saw some about what was going on in the Office of Special Plans. I mean, he was co-located. He was in that office. You know, initially that Office of Special Plans in the Pentagon, Doug Feist's Office of Propaganda, I guess is how we could understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But initially it was told to us by Bill Luddy, who was the boss of our office and Special Plans. He had those two roles. He said when it first formed in August of 2002, when they moved out of our spaces, said it's the expanded Iraq desk. And then 3 weeks after he said that in August 2002, Larry Franklin and his assistant, also working Iran issues, Iran, not Iraq, moved up into Office of Special Plans. So that's where Larry worked. That's where he was co-located. You know, what he did was he worked with them. He was a believer. obviously supporting what they were doing, which we know now after the fact to be creating a storyline to get this country into war with Iraq at the time, and now it looks like much of the same stuff's happening, you know, with Iran. So Larry should be a very valuable person.
Now, tell me who this was benefiting. I mean, I know on this program, I nail the people to that we're doing this for. But in your view, who did we go to war for, Karen?
Well, we didn't go to war for United States security.
No, certainly not.
That's a clear answer. So then you have to say, well, why would a country go to war? What interest does that country have? And I think in the case of Office of Special Plans, in the case of Doug Feist and some of the other neoconservatives, the interest that they have coincides so much with the state of Israel so as to be almost indistinguishable. Now, this is a problem because these people are Americans. I mean, Doug Feist is an American, Larry Franklin's American. These guys are American citizens, and we just have a one-country system, right? You're a citizen of that country, and you put that country first. But I think there was a lot of confusion going on up there as to which country should be pulling the strings and which country's interests should be a priority for the United States of America. And so clearly, going into Iraq was not part of American security. Now, it is unfair to say that it was done solely for Israel. Certainly it wasn't, because if you look at George Bush's own history, you know, I mean, this man has things to prove. And one of the things that he would do, that he was determined to do, that his father never did, of course, remember, you know, George W. Bush has never done anything well in those categories of things that his father had done well. His father,
he's never done anything well in any category.
Well, he really hasn't. And his father, you know, was in World War II for a short time, and he was shot down out of an airplane. I mean, he has all these stories. He excelled at Yale. You know, he was a leader. He was an ambassador. He was a vice president, very successful vice president for 8 years. And George Bush had none of these things. George W. Bush does not compare well to his father. And so in this one way, in toppling Saddam Hussein, the neoconservatives sold him a line, which was something that I think was very near and dear to George Bush's heart. Did it have anything to do with American national security? Of course not. But George Bush has never cared about that. If he cared about America's security, he wouldn't have hidden away, you know, in Texas and Texas and Alabama in the National Guard. He didn't care about America. This is not his thing. But his thing is looking good, trying to achieve some sort of you know, to satisfy his ego, I think, to kind of fill in some of the blank gaps in his persona. And toppling Saddam Hussein certainly was something that George Bush would have done, even if the neocons, if there had been any group that suggested this is a thing.
Well, didn't Bernstein say in his book,
I mean,
Karen, did you read Bernstein's book about, I think it was a hubris or something, where he says that he wants to be the war president, and I mean, it fits right in with what you're saying.
Absolutely. And so you know, I mean, Iraq fit in perfectly well with all of George Bush's, I think, predisposition, and you know, he's very receptive to something in Iraq where he wouldn't have been in something else, particularly because of his own family's history with his father and the whole thing. Now, the neocons, though, it's very clear, and you've gone over this before in your show, and I think your listeners probably pretty familiar with it, as are, you know, millions of people around the world. The Project for New American Century is one source of the storyline, and another key thing that Richard Pearl and Doug Feist and David Worms are all in
Crystal
the
too.
Cabinet. Yeah, all these guys, particularly the document, the Clean Break Strategy, written back in 1996. Mm-hmm. In this document, which was not written for the United States, it's not a United States document. It was written for not even the government of Israel. It was written for a candidate who was running for prime minister at the time, Benjamin Netanyahu, who again I think is in the news as a possible leader of Likud.
You mean the guy that was standing there above the bomb as it went off in London?
Oh, is that Netanyahu?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there you have it. But Netanyahu has been a big player. And at the time, he had contracted out or asked his friends in some of the think tanks in Washington, and these friends included David Wormser, Doug Feist, Richard Pearl, Myrev Wormser, David's wife, and several other neoconservatives, and not just neoconservatives, but extremely pro-Israel neoconservatives.
Crazies in the basement, they've been described as.
Exactly. And these folks did this policy document called a Clean Break Strategy. It's still on the web. You can find it in numerous places. And it really doesn't talk a lot about Iraq, but to the extent that it talks about Iraq, it says that Saddam Hussein's government must be replaced, because until that happens, the rest of the things that need to happen for Israel's security can't happen until we have this other thing happen in Baghdad. So it's a key part of a larger plan.
Yeah.
And it's a fine idea. It would be nice if Israel could take care of its own security. I quite frankly think that it can. I don't think it needs our help. But in any case, a lot of these folks, I think, duplicate Israel's security interests with American security interests. And if you add George W. Bush into the mix, you can see how that could be very confused.
Well, you know, I happen to have looked beyond this group because they're just henchmen for the real controllers. And there is a man named Ben Friedman who did a speech in 1961 outlining the goals of this group, and also Myron. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we'll get into Mr. Untermyer and Mr. Friedman's work. And ask Karen how that fits in with what she knows, and see if we can't move the ball down the field a little further today's show when we return. More on the French Connection. And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Darrell Bradford Smith, your host. Great interview going on here with my friend Karen Katowski, doctor and retired military officer. Karen, I want to ask you this. You know, I've been doing a lot of research on this man, Benjamin Friedman, who was part of this inner circle of Zionists, in fact, and along with a man named Myron Fagan, Untermyer, talking about Justice Brandeis. We're talking about Baruch. We're talking about Morgenthau. We're talking about some of the biggest names here, and they've all been first person implicated in organizing and executing both World War I, World War II, and then all the subsequent actions that we're discussing right now, in fact. And this stuff has been pre-planned for a very, very, very long time, and it has a lot of money behind it. And the goal is to set up this nation-state that extends beyond its own borders. In other words, if you take a look in the Knesset in Israel, Israel does not have its little country. The country of Israel is shown on the board from the Euphrates to the Nile.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's a little scary, isn't it?
Ambitious little country.
Yeah, ambitious little country, that's right. And it seems like the goal they needed to have done here was to eliminate their Arab surrounding states and the Persian state. And so the next thing they need to do is subjugate in some way Syria and then get Iran to implode itself. And they'll virtually have their whole plan having been executed. And I'm wondering, are they megalomaniacs or are they going to get away with this?
Well, you know, I'm not that familiar with how long they've been planning things or anything like that. And I kind of always have to take with a grain of salt the ability of even very intelligent people to plan a lot of things. Now, what I can grant is just like in our country. Are we imperialistic in this country? I mean, not in the communist sense of imperialism, but in the sense of expansion, in the sense of seeking to extend our influence and control around the world. Well, certainly we are. I mean, we have the biggest military in the world for a reason, and we've got bases all over the planet for a reason, okay, because we're very interested in extending our control. Is it for our security? Of course not. It actually makes us more insecure, and it certainly breaks our economy, and a lot of bad things happen, but we have this kind of expansion desire. Does Israel have that? Now, this I haven't studied. If they do, I would suggest that it's going to give them the same problems that it gives any historically expansive and imperialistic state. Any state that looks down upon its neighbors as inferiors, okay? And we did this. We did this ourselves. Remember the Philippines? Our little brown brothers? Sure. So any nation that looks upon its neighbors and other target weaker countries as inferiors, that tells itself that it's going to bring good things like Christianity, or like it was in the Philippines, we were bringing Protestantism to the Catholic Filipinos. But we say, oh, we have these good values. Democracy is our current religion. So, you know, we want to bring democracy. Well, of course we don't. We're trying to extend our influence. And any country that does that, whether it's America or Israel or any other country, Russia, for example, has already gone through this. The Soviet Union has gone through this, okay? And you see what you have now. You have a little teeny tiny country of Russia with less than 100 million people in it. That's what you have, and that's what you get
But Karen, I'm going to stop you there, because if you listen to Ben Friedman and Marvin Fagan, they took over Russia in the 1917 coup. It was their forces and their money coming from their people. They organized it, they executed it, and then they controlled it through Stalin. They were responsible for 30 million murders to bring the country to heel. And then they kept the borders closed for almost 75 years. And it was this same group that's executing these actions right now. And they talk about this stuff. And when you hear it from these people who actually planned it, it is enough to curl your hair. And I don't have curly hair.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I'm not familiar with all that. But, you know, bad stuff. Sure, bad stuff happens. We're part of it. We're part of that system.
Yes, we are.
Also, you know, you talk about Russia and this group, which I'm not familiar with or I haven't read up on. But, you know, Washington, D.C. had a lot to do with how the Soviet Union behaved. That country probably would have gone away a lot sooner. But
that's
we
right.
Helped
that's the
too.
Other side. Oh, Arm & Hammer used to run all over there. Arm & Hammer would arrive with our technology in satchels so that they could keep up to us in military things.
And see, so I don't see it as so sinister. I see it as a bunch of people trying to make money and trying to get it.
Oh, boy. You're right.
This is not religious. And unfortunately, it's not even, it doesn't have anything to do with, there's no connection to Zionism, you know, and the desire that people have to make money over the heads and shoulders of others. I mean,
well, I got to beg to differ with you that it does have something to do with world Zionism. And Untermyer, one of the other people, and Brandeis and these others, you really have to see what they were doing and to understand what's going on. And then you need to understand about the Rothschild fortune and Warburg and our Federal Reserve System and the fact that our media doesn't report to us and is controlled by these same people.
And, you know, we're turning fascist over here in this country. I mean, I don't know, you're living in France and they have different rules, I'm sure, that are different than what we have. But, you know, our trends here at home are increasingly into police state. I mean, that's what we're doing. The Patriot Act has huge things, even the stuff that's not even under debate, you know, the stuff that's permanently in the Patriot Act and it's not being revised or putting a sunset clause on it. These things are creating all of the structures necessary for total crackdown. So, you know, we have problems, and I'm not sure it's Zionism exactly over here. We have big problems.
I think, when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we have a short segment with Karen before she takes off. We'll hang for the next question till that moment, and be right back. And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We're back for the last segment here with my guest, Karen Kotowski. Great to have her here with me. She's got a show on RBN at 9 to 11 on Saturday nights if you want to hear Karen's program. She usually deals with military issues more often than not and has quite a guest list of people she brings on. And I want to applaud her for her efforts at getting her part of the truth out there, Karen. You know, here's the thing. I know we only have a couple of minutes here. I'm going to ask you to do me a favor and maybe take a listen to Ben Friedman's speech that I have on my site. It's about a 40-minute speech. It's a very powerful indictment of what the points I just made. And they all fit in with this man Fagan's speech that was made in 67, I believe, and also this man Untermyer's speech that was made in 1933. And it fits in with the rest of the stuff that I told you. When you hear this, what it'll do is bring the rest of what's happened since the 60s till now into focus for you. It's really that powerful.
Well, does Ben Friedman and these others offer any remedies? Do they have any remedies? I mean, they're saying that this is happening.
We've got to expose them. It said before it's too late. They said absolutely. Ben Friedman was somebody who was an insider who said it was wrong and he quit on them.
Mm-hmm.
The others were actually insiders who stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave speeches to their own group, and it was recorded, and we just happened to have a first-person account of what they said.
I would say in one respect, I mean, he's certainly correct, because this kind of aggressive behavior is not good for Israel. It's not good for this little state of Israel.
No, it's not.
Israel's security has gone downhill, and all of the people, this is what to me is very ironic about so many of the pro-Israel policymakers in the American government today, is that these guys are defending what they're doing. Well, you know, they think this will be good for it. It's been terrible for Israel. So they're not even succeeding in the one thing that I think many of them hold very dear. And this is both Christian Zionists as well as, you know, all kinds of other people who put Israel's needs as a primary concern. You know, it's not good. The things that they're doing is not, it hasn't been good for Israel. It's you know, Israel's not economically strong. It's a wealthy little country by comparison to its neighbors, but its economic structure is weak. It's a socialist state. You know, tourism is their big thing, and that's been hurt. It's not a very safe place to stay for most people.
Well, they don't have to worry about money. They just keep robbing the American government for all their money.
Again, you know, we're subsidizing a country that really, if it was any other country, we would certainly have put it on some sort of financial management program like we
did
in
South America.
Well, they've
just stolen $2.2 trillion from the American Pentagon and that Doug Zuckheim was in charge of, and he can't account for it.
I'll have to look into that. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah, Zuckheim is a interesting guy.
Oh, boy, is he ever.
And that's interesting that we would have a rabbi as our budget person at the Pentagon.
Yeah. And then have $2 trillion end up missing?
Yeah.
Well,
amazing,
you know, interesting
stuff.
Karen, they were selling brand new jets over, to the Israelis as scrap.
Oh, my goodness. That's
yeah,
all.
Well, you know, it gets even
you're
more
helping
and more.
Expose that. You're helping expose that, and that's good. That'll be the step in the right direction.
Well, thanks, Karen, for coming on. You're always welcome on the French Connection.
Sure,
I'm proud to know you.
Happy to do it. Same
thank
here.
Thank you, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back after the long break with more from the French Connection.